Okay, recording in progress. Okay. Are you ready?
Well, do you wanna record properly?
Yeah.
So you're healthy and it's all fine. Perfect, like that.
Yeah. I'll check again after part one, okay?
Okay, fine. Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Welcome to another edition of the Alapra podcast. Joining me in, not in studio, is not Mary. You're sitting on a balcony in the posh part of Madrid. We are separated. Physically separated because of one thing, the coronavirus. How are you holding up over there, honey?
I'm okay. Holding on, same as everybody else.
Do you want me to fly a drone with baked beans over to your balcony?
Well, I mean, if you're gonna do that, I'd rather get something else.
Such as?
I don't know. Cannelloni.
Okay, good choice, yeah. I told you I bought Pringles today in the shop. They have chicken tikka masala flavor. And that in itself isn't amazing information, but the details around going to the shop was, it's the first time I've been out of the house in 2 days, and no, I'm not a recluse, even though I'm wearing a hoodie right now, and I can see you're wearing a hoodie as well. This is the attire for being shut in, and there was a queue to go into the shop, basically a one in, one out system, and this is the life that we're living now. Since we're in your country,
we look like monks.
But we're in Spain, you're Spanish, and there has been a state of emergency declared. This is a reaction to the coronavirus. So, first of all, what's your reaction to this? I think this is. I think most people probably know what's going on at the moment. We don't need to give too much background detail to the pandemic itself, but we can go into insights about what it's like in Spain, because the different countries have different relationships with the coronavirus. Some countries like Italy and China have had more experience with it. It's just going into Latin America now, and Ireland and the UK are kind of grappling with this as well. This virus, which is going to peak over there in those two places by April, May, possibly even June. But Spain itself has been one of the worst affected, and inside Spain, Madrid has been one of the worst affected places in this country, and now we're living through a state of emergency where we have to stay indoors for 15 days unless you have a dog that you have to walk, unless you have to go to the shop for food, or unless you have to go to the chemist for medication. This is a situation. This is very strange, very bizarre, but it is a reality. So how are you coping with it, or what's your reaction to it, first of all?
Well, the thing I was going to say is, apart from everything you've mentioned, is actually you can go out if you are going to work. So this is like the most bizarre thing for me, because when I heard this, when it was announced officially on Saturday, I was thinking, okay, I thought it was necessary and so great stuff, and everybody's like willing to do it. But then they didn't specify what industries had to go into work. So all I thought was like, okay, fair enough. You know, if you work like in a gas company or electricity or that sort of like supply, then okay, it's needed like to keep the country going. Or if you work, all the things that were like essential. But then virtually what has happened, and I think this is important for us to let other countries or other people know, is that at the moment, because they didn't specify, they just said, well, it has to be, everybody that the company say that they needn't go to work and they cannot do teleworking. Which there are some, I mean, there are some, of course, but a lot of them, they're just like sending the workers or asking them to go into work just for the sake of it, because sometimes like their offices and they wouldn't really need them to go, and they're still going. So, I mean, in the end, like this morning, there were like trains full of people. Yeah, and then you're sort of like sitting at home thinking, well, I mean, like I'm staying at home, and then of course there are people that have to go to work, but there are other people that are just being made go to work. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, it's not gonna work all this part because I don't know about you, but I hear like, I don't know, as if you were like doing this in a bath full of water.
No, that's rain in the window, but it's probably gonna be fine. So just keep talking.
That's the rain.
Yeah.
God, okay. It's not pouring that much over here.
Don't worry, we'll keep this fit in as well. This is all part of the drama.
No, it's anyway. Okay, fine. So as long as we're not deafening the listener.
I mean, we're being responsible because we're not meeting up to do this podcast in person. So we're...
Yeah, even though it's work. So it's justified, really.
Is it work if you enjoy it so much, though? That's another question, but that's beside the
point. Yeah, that's another question. That's true. No, but in the end, I mean, it's not like people's fault is like... because even like Guardia Civil, which is like our... Well, it's a strange hybrid of like police and the military that we have here. Well, it's not no way. It would be complicated to explain. But basically, it's another type of police that we have. And yeah, they were like, oh, they pulled this picture of the train station, and they were like, look, you have to stay at home. And it's like, well, yeah, but those people, I mean, I'm sure they haven't like gone out to work this morning because they wanted to. They just got phone calls like from their bosses, you know, saying you have to call in. I mean, I've got a friend who works in an excavation, and she had to go this morning to work in an archaeological dig, and it's like, why? Do you know what I mean? That it can wait, really. But it's purely because the boss said, you know, you're on a temp contract and yeah, you have to go. So, I mean, it's a tricky one because, of course, like, what you don't want is people losing their jobs. But, I mean, surely, like, there has to be support from, like, official support that means that you know, bosses just say, look, just stay at home or like do teleworking. I mean, there are some industries that cannot do it, but there are plenty of industries that can do it and at the moment are not doing it. So this is the situation.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
maybe that, reporting from
where that happened though, in Spain, the excavation.
Yeah, here in Madrid. I mean, they had to report and like go to work in the outskirts of Madrid.
And they're straight on WhatsApp to complain.
No, I mean, they're just like saying, you know, because obviously at the same time that people are being sent over from Egypt, that are in excavation in Egypt, and they're being flown over today. And then these other people are reporting to work in Madrid, so it's all a bit weird.
Well, I don't know. From what I've heard, it's a little bit different that like everybody's working from home. Nobody wants to work and go to the offices. Now, obviously, if the metros were full today, and I was very surprised by that because I didn't know that happened until my brother actually told me and he saw it on The Guardian, and then you told me just now. So there must be that dynamic where people feel compelled to go in. My understanding is like that a lot of people want to stay at home, but the dynamic is that the bosses are nervous that they don't want to do any work, so they have to be very rigorous and justify what they've been doing while they've been at home, which, you know, in the midst of a global pandemic is kind of ridiculous, even though you can see some sense to it. But I think most people are responsible and either want to work and are not going to see the global pandemic as a holiday. On the other side of it though, if you see people going onto the metro like we saw this morning and other things, it just also shows how irresponsible people can be. Now, the reason that in Ireland they're talking about having people in their houses for 2 weeks, if not more, is because people were on the piss. In Temple Bar in Dublin, students were the other night in congregating when it's been made explicit that they shouldn't be congregating, because they mightn't get sick, but of course they could make someone who's vulnerable, either an old person or somebody with an underlying condition, they could make that person sick, and that's the whole point. This has happened in Spain as well. People were told to stay indoors, but people were still congregating in parks and even going out and going to restaurants and bars and things like that. And Champions League match between Valencia and Atalanta was behind closed doors, but 3,000 Valencia fans still went to the stadium to stand outside it to sing and support their team, and with the attitude of, well, I'm not scared of any virus, but you know, this kind of mentality I think is very prevalent. And on one side you have people who think that this isn't a big deal, even though it is kind of a big deal now. It is more than a big deal. But despite the restrictions, and those restrictions are there because people haven't been behaving properly, despite these predictions, these conditions, people are still, I think, looking for ways to flout the strict conditions that we have to live by now, you know. And it's, I think it's very surprising and very strange why some people don't seem to get it, that we're living this very unique, well, perhaps not so unique in the context of our history, our human history, but something that, you know, we have never experienced in our lifetimes, and even our parents, I don't think, really have really experienced in our lifetimes, you know, why the penny isn't dropping about staying inside and not going to work, you know. So I think there's probably elements that you've discussed about people being compelled to work, but probably from how I've seen this is that people are leaving the houses because they just don't see the coronavirus as a serious threat, or because they just don't want to be cooped up in their houses for too long, you know. I mean, there was a car driving through the neighborhood last night, and I said to you, it's like a movie with a microphone saying, you know, go back to your houses, don't leave your houses. And it's because even despite the state of emergency being declared, there's still people going on the streets, and I'm just surprised by how many people are still out there. A lot less than there usually are, so it's noticeable that it's a different situation, that the streets are different, the city is different, but still notable how many people are going out. So I don't know, that's just my two cents so far on this part of the story. I mean, and there's even like parts of Madrid where shops that were supposed to be closed because only food shops are allowed to be open, have, you know, were open, and the police had to come and forcibly close it down as well. But overall,
really?
I think, yeah, in Fuenlabrada, I think, and then also in Leganés, you know, on the outskirts. But I mean, I think, like, I mean, to give Madrid its due, and I guess the rest of Spain, even though I'm more familiar with the Madrid case, like 99% of the people are following the guidelines and doing good and responsible and doing a good job, you know. So I don't know, what other aspect of this do you want to discuss?
No, I mean, I think like it's just something is gonna have to change tonight or tomorrow about this situation, because obviously the trains like were reduced to 50% capacity, but then so many people were still going to work. So then in the end it was chaos. And well, I heard like a press conference and the person responsible for Renfe was saying, well, no, it's just because there was a breakdown and that's why it was crowded, but we'll increase the trains from tomorrow so that people don't have this feeling that it's crowded. And it's like, well, never mind the meter distance, you know, that you're supposed to keep. Like, it's just like any other morning. So, I mean, that has to change. But of course, I suppose like scenarios just pop up as we go along, and then we just need to keep fixing it, really.
And you know, if you've been reading the news, you open the newspaper, and if you're into sports, if you're into music, if you're into politics, you know, Tom Hanks and his wife are infected. The wife of the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, his wife is infected. The Canadian Prime Minister's wife is infected. You open the football pages.
You're making it sound like it's all the wives.
Well, not just the wives. But
the wives of the world are infected.
Mikel Arteta, you know, I mean, just anybody, you know, a lot of high-profile people. And psychologically, it's going to be... It's 15 days in Ireland, and it's probably going to be longer. It's also the same in UK, and it's probably going to be longer. You know, things like restaurants being closed, perhaps, or the football being off the screens or off the pitches even as well. In Spain, I hope it is 15 days. The weather is better here, so that could probably kill the virus a lot sooner than in other parts of the world, or in Europe at least. But it just John Oliver said it in his video today very well. This is going to be a very tough time. It's going to be a very lonely time. Psychologically, when you're queuing for a shop, you've never done this before. It's very strange. And, you know, I mean, in the paper today, they're talking about parts of the world that had to, you know, have Ebola and then, or other diseases, and, you know, living with it becomes part of daily life. So it becomes normalized, and it's not so traumatic, to use a word, you know. But these kind of things that we have to do now, aside from washing our hands, aside from leaving the house with gloves on, but, you know, queuing for a shop to go in there, to keep your distance from somebody, to see the streets deserted, and even the good things, because people are going onto the balconies every day now at different times to applaud, as they should, the healthcare workers who are looking after us and trying to defeat the coronavirus in the front line. It's just weird. It's all so weird. It's just weird. I can't say it any other way. I mean, have you found it to be a strange time? Or
yeah, of course. I mean, I think we have it easy in a way in Western Europe, that we're just, we haven't had to go through like this, people of our age, you know, haven't had to go through strange times. But of course, this is probably the closest that most of us are going to come to feeling like, you know, you're in a war zone or curfew or anything like that, you know. So I suppose it's like a bit rich from everybody. But no, it's interesting. But I don't know, I suppose in a way it's important. I think like the most important thing for me that I keep thinking about is like all the people that are on their own, but like literally like people that are already normally quite lonely, you know? So I think that's the most important thing, like to keep an eye on everybody who, especially elderly people that live on their own. And even my mom, like I was laughing at her this morning because she rang me again, like she's ringing me 2 or 3 times a day every day. And then she just saying, you know, well, so far, like, you know, we're doing well because like everybody keeps sending jokes and that's just like making it, you know, like you all send stupid things and that makes us laugh. So that makes it easy like to keep going and stuff. So well, I think it's just important to keep communicating.
Do you think as well, because we're living this, that we can, you know, the Brits might talk about the Blitz spirit, but now we know what that's like. Exactly. So we have the
Blitz.
The Blitz spirit, you know, the stiff upper lip. But now we're living it, so we can tell this story to our grandkids. This is
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a drama like that, but obviously you're exaggerating, I know. It's just made so much easier by the fact that you can communicate with everybody. I mean, imagine like this, but not being able to do what we're doing right now, or, you know, or to speak to, or for it to be very difficult to speak to any of your family and all that. Like that would be like the real difficulty, you know?
You'd be worried about them and WhatsApp. And Skype brings these people closer, of course. I mean, what's fascinating is like that you see a lot of people responding to this very creatively. You mentioned the memes and the videos and things like that, but you have like people streaming concerts, doing things online that normally we associate with offline activity. So people doing public readings, or well, not public readings, but doing readings, performances and things like that. Now, obviously, I think that shows the capacity of the internet to bring people together. You mentioned we can't do our tour on the street, obviously, so but you can do virtual tours on Google, which I never knew you could do, but it's fascinating that you can. I mean, how does that work very quickly, a virtual Google tour?
From Google Earth, well, just basically you keep on going to specific points and adding them as a path that you can walk along, and then you can add some photographs as well. So yeah, just currently investigating that.
It's fascinating. But I think as well, you know, people are saying that maybe our way of life is going to change fundamentally. And, you know, in one sense, probably not, because it's not the first time we've had a global pandemic. And when you're living it, it seems very dramatic, but then once you're on the other side of it, it's probably something that you just take for granted and go back to your normal habits. But, you know, people do travel a lot, maybe unnecessarily for business, and you wonder how productive it is. And the networks of our life, you know, of our society, you know, are very interdependent and have weak points as well. I don't know, do you project, or do you see, or do you think that, you know, once this is all said and done, things are going to change fundamentally, how we do life, basically?
I don't think so, because I think we're really good at just forgetting things very quickly. So the only thing that I hope, like, comes out of it is the potential of, you know, teleworking in some cases, and also, like, flexible, especially like Flexitan, like, for example, we don't have in Spain, or very few companies have it, you know. And yeah, I just hope, like, it becomes something more positive for the workers, or for the workforce in general. But, well, I have my doubts. Hopefully I'm wrong and it does help improve this. But certainly when it comes to contents and online contents and making things accessible for everybody, you know, hopefully we learn a lesson from it.
I think what's interesting as well, you have some curiosities. In Ireland, we're actually in a pretty good position when it comes to food because of Brexit. Nobody knew what was going to happen because of Brexit, so there's a huge supply of food there. Also very lucky that there's a lot of cross-border collaboration between North and South there as well. And the reason I bring this up is because, like, the coronavirus isn't, or it shouldn't be something that's political. It should be about people coming together left and right and doing what's right for the greater good. Stephen Fry posted a tweet to this effect the other day. And, you know, but I think, and I said this to you before we started doing the podcast, if we project forwards and look at the state of things, China is doing quite well in terms of cases. Global cases have now outstripped cases in China. And you have a curve, you know, cases start very low and then reach a peak and then they fall down again. But the measures being taken in Latin America, in Ireland, they've closed all the schools. In Spain, we're doing this emergency now. That probably that peak, that number of cases will get lower and the problem becomes a lot more manageable. But in the two countries that are very linked politically, Trump's America, it is a political football, the coronavirus, and not explicitly so in Britain, but they're handling it so poorly because perhaps they know the health service can't deal with it, or maybe they're handling it so poorly or pretending it's not an issue like they are in Trump's America because they promised this dividend from not being in Europe for the health service, and that dividend isn't really true. It's not going to come to the health service. So for whatever different reason, you have these cult of personality right-wing governments that are doing the coronavirus very badly, while in other countries that also can be right-wing or left-wing, but other countries seem to be doing it well, and these two countries seem to be the outlier, and they seem to be because they're led by very similar men. No, I mean, is that too much of a coincidence, or is there something there as well that politically, because decisions made this year and the previous year and other years, I mean, Donald Trump last year cut funding to a body that whose whole point was to monitor the spread of infectious diseases and pandemics, but now they're not really operational in America anymore. So, you know, this would be the time where they would be earning their crust, so to speak. So is there a political dimension to this as well, that we see some countries doing it very badly, you know, that this is just a consequence of personality rather than proper policy?
I don't know. I think what you said, I think those two particular cases are like very specific. I mean, and there's other countries that are not normally known for like their
that's why I said like
human rights or
you know. Of course, I mean China have done very well with the coronavirus, but also they have spread it because of their lack of transparency and their lack of democracy. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, but this particular
I think it just it speaks more of like those specific countries, those two, you know. And but certainly there's I think it just comes from like this sort of like arrogant attitude that you know, it's not going to happen to us, or we can do better than everybody, or you know, more like a corporate type of attitude like Trump has. You know, I was reading earlier today that he was attempted to get exclusivity for the vaccine and stuff for the United States from a German company.
Yeah,
and things like that. And it's like, I mean, they're run countries like corporations. So then he's just thinking of like what's good for his private company and for his assets. So then, of course, that's never going to work for the general public. And you could say the same about Boris Johnson.
Yes, that is true. But going to perhaps... I was going to go to the Barcelona thing, but the happy story, we'll finish with that. But for example, we spoke on the podcast a while ago, and there's a blog article on the blog website, the blog, about Nigerian words in English and the next tomorrow and this kind of concept that we take things for granted, that the machinery of life trundles on, and we just expect it to happen the next day and the next day. But I think now we really appreciate the vulnerability of how these things are constructed and how easily they can fall apart, and the idea of getting to tomorrow and then the next tomorrow, I think really encapsulates what we're living at the moment as well. It's just that we shouldn't take these things so easily for granted, you know. Do you get that impression as well? It sounds very cliche, but when you're living it, it does have a certain type of truth to it as well. So I don't know if you are seeing things with this kind of gaze as well, these kind of goggles.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's going to be revulsive. Is that a word in English? It's just like something that is just going to take people out of, you know, their own lives for 5 minutes and allow them to like reassess things and consider things. Probably then later on things will continue to be the same, but you know, it's just it's like a bit of a wake-up call, you know, for everybody to reassess things, you know.
Okay, and going to Barcelona, I predicted this was going to happen. I said to myself that, you know, in the morning it happened, there's going to be some person singing an opera from the balcony here and someone will record it. But what actually happened in Barcelona surprisingly involves Celine Dion and My Heart Will Go On.
And it's just the guy playing the piano in a balcony, and then just another one with a saxophone sort of like joined in, and but they had amplifiers or something so you could hear all over the streets. It was actually quite nice.
That's good. Someone joined in, and it was like one of those authentic moments where things really beautifully unified. No, I feel a real sense of unity. It's very hard to capture that, but these kind of things bring out the best in people sometimes. So this is the coronavirus, playing it by ear. The economy is going to get absolutely slaughtered as well. It's going to take 10 months for tourism to go back to a normal level, which is very damaging for countries like Ireland and Spain. The stock market is tanking, and for freelancers like ourselves, we have no income because classes get cancelled and everything slows down. So yeah, there's that as well. I don't know, is there any other aspect you want to cover about the coronavirus or?
No, I think we've covered it for now. Now we just have to make sure that this is actually being recorded with the program we've downloaded.
Exactly. It's funny though, before we finish,
Yeah.
I was talking to you before as well about the 1919 Spanish flu, and so called because Spain was a neutral country, had a free press, and they were the first to refer to it, and then they got stuck with the moniker Spanish flu. But then, because we did a podcast on Thursday with Café de la Lluvia, where we were interviewed in Spanish about our book Fake News, Pueblos que Cambiaron el Curso de la Historia. It's a good read if you have nothing to do at home. We spoke about how in different parts of the world the Spanish flu had different names because these flus are always referred to as like coming from somewhere else, this foreign agent. And even Donald Trump's speech the other night was about this Chinese pandemic and it was coming from foreigners and outside and all these things. But some interesting stories in Zamora in Spain when it was kicking off this pandemic. The bishop there insisted on 9 straight days of mass. And so the whole place went to the church and then were kissing the same crucifix and then had the highest mortality rate in Spain for this virus, you know. So and you can go back even further, and a lot of people have done that. The Guardian have done it, some history podcasts have done it as well. But the way we react and act in pandemics doesn't really change very much, no. You still have the same kind of dynamics of people following the rules and other people thinking it's not such a big deal. So as we argue in our book, again, fake news, bulos que cambiaron, of course, the last story, history never really changes. So that is it. The recorder, I don't even know how long we've been talking for, I think half an hour or something like
Half
that,
an
but
hour, yeah.
So it's not too bad for one of our podcasts. We'll leave a link to the Café
Yeah.
de la Lluvia interview in the description. It is in Spanish, but if you want to practice your Spanish or are a Spanish speaker, why not check it out? And just to give me some crumb of comfort that everything's going to be okay. And for nostalgia as well, Mary, can you just tell people where they can find us on the old social media?
They can find us on Twitter at elarpa1, on Facebook at elarpa media, and the podcast on any platform, the platform of your choice, the platform that you're listening on right now.
Exactly. We always get into the flow of saying where you can find us and then not realizing that the podcast is, well, they found us here. But never
And the
mind.
blog,
Yeah,
three W's, irishsliceofmadrid.com.
exactly, irishsliceofmadrid.com. We paid for all the W's, so it's a normal website address.
Yeah.
And so that is it. I will see you in person whenever I see you.
Yeah.
So.
That's not to be mentioned soon enough. But we can, keep on going with the podcast. And this is an interesting experiment, to see if how well it works with the listeners. So.
Yeah, well, we've been doing 2 videos for the book, and that book again is fake. No, okay, I won't say the title again, but basically promotional videos. I can hear the rain in your part of Madrid now.
Yeah.
So it's soft here, but it's raining over there. And if the audio here is better than the microphone, then that'll be a good and bad thing. That'll be bittersweet. That we pay so much for a good microphone, and
Be
we
like, there'd
should.
be so much rain. It would be like half an hour of rain
No, I'm saying if the
as a
audio.
podcast.
No, if this audio from the app is better than what we normally do, then there'll be murder.
Yeah.
That this free app is better. But anyway, that's beside the point. I can't even remember what I was saying. Oh yes, the videos that we've been doing videos around Madrid, promoting the book with different chapters. And just in the spirit of the coronavirus, we're going to record our parts of the video of the next one in our houses because of, well, the whole state of emergency. So if you see that on social media, don't be freaked out. It's just because we can't leave home. So this is me. Good
And me from the other side of Madrid saying good luck as well. Bye.